This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you, Roger. And I'm Orion Samuelson saying good morning and welcome to the Saturday Morning Show. Good to be with you again after what has turned out to be a very busy week. Well, first of all, Max Armstrong is still traveling in New Zealand with a group of farmers on a farm tour to that country where you'll find more sheep than people. And the activities on my calendar for this week, well, the American Farm Bureau Federation annual convention in Orlando, Florida, and a chilly Orlando, Florida, and then yesterday a trip over to Grand Rapids, Michigan. Good morning to all of you across the lake who listen to us here on WGN Radio. And it was fun visiting yesterday with the members of the Michigan Association of County Fairs. 1,600 people, they tell me, turned out for that annual convention. I last spoke at that convention back in 2004, and they invited me back, which generally means that they liked what I did, or they didn't, and they wanted to give me a second chance. But to the people across the lake, had a great time in Grand Rapids, Michigan yesterday, and talking about county fairs and the challenges they're facing, not just in Illinois, where we face a challenge on everything because of the lack of a budget, but county fairs, too, are having budget problems all across the country. But thanks to a lot of great volunteers that make it possible for counties to put on their fairs, and they've been doing it for a long time. I think there was one fair in Michigan, a county fair, that was going into its 142nd year that they have been staging a county fair. So good time in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and that convention is going on today. The other fun thing about county fair conventions, because nearly every state does this type of convention every year, the vendors who make their living going to fairs and expositions are all there. The carnival people are there, the acts, the magicians, and the comedians, and they're all setting up their booth trying to get the county fair to hire them for their summer appearance. So it was interesting. It was a good time. Interesting week on Wall Street and continuing to scare a lot of people. But as I have continued to say all the while I've been reporting business, take a look at your portfolio twice a year. Don't do it on a day-to-day basis because it'll drive you crazy, particularly in the kind of a market that we've experienced now since the first of the year. So that's part of the market advice I always pass along. The other market advice I report, or the rule that never fails, is prices never go the same way forever. There is always a price correction. And as far as the stock market is concerned, it had been a steady increase since we came through the crisis back in 2008, 2009. And we had been on a steady increase. Well, sooner or later, that will turn around and we'll see the prices go a different direction. And it happens in everything. Houses, automobiles, wheat, corn, cattle, hogs, you name it. Prices always have a correction. I thought I was wrong on the oil market a couple of years ago when it hit $148 a barrel. But no. Even oil is subject to the market rule that never fails. Prices never go the same way forever. Well, at the American Farm Bureau Federation convention in Orlando, Florida, a historic convention, for the first time in 16 years, they had an election for president. Bob Stallman last summer announced that he was not going to seek re-election after 16 years. And at the convention, there were four candidates, including Don Vilwalk, who had been president of the Indiana Farm Bureau. And there was the president of the Oregon Farm Bureau, the president of the Arizona Farm Bureau, and then the president of the Georgia Farm Bureau, all candidates for the role of president of the American Farm Bureau. In the long history of the American Farm Bureau Federation, this president is the 12th that they've had. It took three votes. In order to be elected, you have to have a simple majority of 51%. And it took three votes to get that done. And when it was all done, Vincent Zippy Duval, the president of the Georgia Farm Bureau, was elected president of the American Farm Bureau. So that means that for the last time, I sat down to do an annual interview with Bob Stallman. I've interviewed him 15 times of the 16 years he has served. The one time I didn't, well, it was the convention I couldn't get to, and a lot of you couldn't either. The famous Atlanta Farm Bureau convention a few years ago, and the ice storm that hit Atlanta, pretty much shutting down the airport and made it very difficult for people to get in and out of that convention. I was one of those who never got there. But this convention, I did have the opportunity to sit down with Bob Stallman and reflect a little bit on what he has been involved in for 16 years. And here on the Saturday Morning Show, we'll share that with you after this time up. January just isn't going to be the same, Bob, if you and I can't sit down at the Farm Bureau Convention and visit. It's been quite a convention for you thus far, I would guess.
It has. It is my last convention as president of the AFBF, and I don't know, Orion, maybe you and I'll need to decide to meet somewhere in January every year and do a little interview.
Well, let's do it where it's warm.
I'll vote for that.
How emotional is this for you, Bob?
I'm not a very emotional person by nature. Yeah. You know, this is something I've worked at, I worked hard at for 16 years. I feel good about where the organization is, and I feel certain that it's time for someone else to take up the reins. So not a lot of emotion, you know, sort of some mixed feelings about, you know, what am I going to be actually doing on a day-to-day basis. But we'll see. But I'm feeling pretty good about all this.
You have played a role in good times and bad times. Any good time going to stick out in your memory?
Well, there's been so many. Some of the best times, I think, have been when I've had the opportunity to travel across the country when the planes are on time. But, you know, travel across the country and see and meet and other farmers, be out on their operations. And, you know, those were the good days, the gimme days, if you will, compared to some days in Washington where the fights got pretty intense.
Would they be the bad times for you, the challenge of legislators?
Well, it's a challenge, you know. It's not bad because it's something you do and it's something that's necessary. But it's much more of a challenge to do that than it is to be on somebody's farm talking with them about what they're raising.
So for young people, let's talk about what you see as the greatest opportunities in agriculture over the next decade.
Oh, the opportunities, I think, are fantastic in agriculture. I've said many times I'd kind of love to be a young farmer starting all over again, and it's kind of the geeky side of me. All the technology that's out there is just phenomenal, and you look at some of the things that are coming down the pipeline. I mean, 10 years from now, I don't think we can imagine what some farms are going to look like, and that's exciting for me, but it also means that agriculture in the U.S. will remain very vibrant, and I think it will be exciting enough to attract a lot of young people into the profession.
When I talked to Secretary Tom Vilsack for our annual year-end interview in December, he said the United States is the one country that doesn't have to depend on anybody else for food.
He's absolutely right. And if you look at the history of the world and if you look at the countries now, you know that their first concern is do they have food for their population, because a population that's not fed can get noisy pretty quickly. And the U.S. doesn't need food from anybody else, and we want to provide an opportunity for others to be able to eat by exporting our food to them.
You were in China at the end of the year, were you? No, earlier than that. But that's one country that can't afford to have starving people.
Absolutely. They have to provide enough food for their people. They only have about you know, 1/7 of the arable land, yeah. But they have 20+% of the population. And so they need to trade for food. But then that's how they've become our number one agricultural trading partner, which is the way it ought to be. They need food, and we can provide it. Now, obviously, we have a lot of issues with China and some of the games that are played sometimes. But at the end of the day, they need our products.
Well, let's talk about the greatest challenges facing particularly young farmers as we watch the age of farmers continue to advance.
Well, there's probably two big ones. And the ever-increasing cost of regulation, I think, puts a damper on the desire of young people to come into agriculture. I think that's one thing. But then you look at the other part, and that's the amount of capital it takes to really get involved in production agriculture. Now, you know, a lot of young farmers start small, which is typical, and grow their operations. But even then, we're a very asset-intensive industry. And so it takes some capital, and sometimes that's hard to come by for young farmers and ranchers.
One of the things that has bothered me for a long time is the lack of estate planning on the part of farmers and ranchers. That may be one way to set up a program to help young people.
Well, I think so. I think that is possible. You know, that how to transition a farm from an older generation to a younger generation, particularly if there's not a younger generation that's a family member and wants to go into the business, you know, I think there's some real opportunity there to provide, you know, sort of a transition for those who want to engage in agriculture, a mentorship, if you really look at it that way. And there are efforts in that direction, although they, you know, haven't borne a lot of fruit yet.
Let's talk about the ongoing problem between consumers, probably removed from the farm six generations, and the food producers, GMOs, animal rights, and all of that. And you've been an important part in U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance. Are we making progress?
I think we are making progress. In one respect, the new communication world that we live in now, with social media and internet-based messaging and communication. You know, it's given us an opportunity as farmers and ranchers to engage with a broad audience or engage one-on-one with consumers who want their questions answered. And that avenue really didn't exist 10 years ago to the extent it does now. So it gives us an opportunity. But we have to take advantage of that opportunity. We have to be there. We have to do the work. We have to make the connection. Because if we don't, there are others who, for philosophical reasons or other reasons, don't like what we do in agriculture. They can find a prime audience there that doesn't really understand what we do with modern production agriculture.
Are we getting support from agribusiness, from commodity groups, from groups like Farm Bureau? Are we finally coming together to carry this message?
There's always room for improvement, but the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance, I think, has been a prime example of how you can get a diverse set of agricultural interests together, all the way from industry to consumer to producer groups to checkoff groups. We have over 90, almost 100 affiliates at U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance now contributing toward the cause. And so I think that's been a phenomenal exercise in getting the industry together, if you will, to solve a problem.
So let's talk about regulations, or what I call over-regulations. I keep telling my listeners, you're not alone. You've got OSHA, you've got EPA, you've got Humane Society. How do we deal with these regulations coming from people who maybe don't understand?
Well, that's a two-part answer.
The
first way is for those policymakers who pass the laws that allow the regulations to be written, you have to work with them to make them understand what the actual impacts of that will be, whether it's cost-benefit analysis makes sense, and all of those kind of issues. But then you have to also continue to work with consumers because it's that's sort of the noise, if you will, that the policymakers have to deal with. If consumers will say, yeah, we kind of understand what agriculture does and know that these aren't regulations aren't a good idea, they're less likely to be put in place. But, you know, if they don't understand that and other groups are saying, you know, these consumers need to call their member of Congress and say, you know, this is a bad thing that U.S. agriculture is doing, therefore we need to regulate it. You know, that's the yin and the yang in a democracy, basically, is, you know, what the voters are saying to the elected leaders.
How pleased were you at the congressional action on COOL?
We were pleased with that. That was an issue that was outstanding, should have been solved much faster than it was, but at least it's been resolved. And then fortunately now we will not have Canada and Mexico retaliating against other products, including many other agricultural products.
And then the one that is ongoing, I think trade negotiations are like watching paint dry. They take forever. Trans-Pacific Trade Authority, are we going to get that done?
I think we will, because the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement is a good agreement. For agriculture, it's a good agreement. So I think we'll get it done, but I think we'll have all the usual politics of trade wrapped around the process. Trade votes are difficult no matter which party's in power, no matter what the agreement is, and I think this will be very similar. But for us in agriculture, it's very clear that this is a positive. It's a huge market. It's huge trading block, and it gives us an opportunity to sort of set up the trade rules in an environment that or in a part of the world that China's trying to get more influence in.
Final question. What's Bob Stallman going to do for the next month?
For the next month, I'm going to wrap things up. It'll take me about that long to wrap things up. And then after that, the calendar's kind of blank. But, you know, the decision to step down gives me the freedom to pursue that which I choose, and I haven't chosen yet.
And you won't leave agriculture?
I'm not. I'll always have the farm. You know, the farm is down there and producing rice and cattle, and that, you know, that hadn't changed.
Well, been a pleasure working with you for the 16 years and before that, actually. The very best of luck and good health.
Well, thank you, Orion. Same to you.
Bob Stallman, president of the American Farm Bureau Federation. You're listening to the Saturday Morning Show, WGN Radio Chicago. It's 28 minutes after 5, getting close to our 5:30 news break this morning. But looking ahead for a moment, it's that busy time of the year when farmers and ranchers hold meetings and market outlook gatherings and events of that type as they get ready for the crop report and all of the other reports that will be coming up before we start putting seed in the ground. The Northern Pulse Growers will be holding their annual meeting in Minot, North Dakota. And I'm not sure what I was really thinking when I said, I'd be happy to go to Minot, North Dakota in January and speak at the meeting. But anyway, the last Monday of the month, the 25th of January, Minot, North Dakota. I haven't been there for a few years, so it'll be fun to go back to that part of the country. And then 2 days later, it's off to San Diego for the annual convention of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. That's one of my favorite conventions. Brings in cowboys and cow ladies from all over the country, a lot of them from out west, dressed in western garb and all that sort of thing, and that'll be in San Diego, California. It gets underway on the 27th of January, and we'll go through the 30th, and we'll be out there for that event. And then, of course, the Outstanding Young Farmer Gathering, Cincinnati, Ohio, this year. That'll be getting underway on February February 11th, and it'll go through Valentine's Day, February 14th. Then we get into the National Farm Machinery Show and Tractor Pulling at Louisville and World Ag Expo at Tulare, California. Well, you're listening to Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNradio.com. Thank you very much, Roger. And I just, I'm working from my Huntley studio this morning. And yeah, you're right on the temperature, but boy, it's going to get cold again. So, all right, part two of the Saturday Morning Show. Good to have you with us. As I mentioned earlier, Max Armstrong returns this week from his tour of agriculture in New Zealand. Should bring back some interesting stories dealing with sheep production, with dairy production, and with kiwi production, because New Zealand is where kiwi is really from, and we import a good deal of that food throughout the year. So Max will be back from New Zealand, and we'll be... You know what? We'll be home every day this week. No trips this week, not until a week from Monday. But the other thing I have to mention about next week It's a four-day trading week, and I think maybe traders on Wall Street need an extra day for the weekend. Monday is the observance of Martin Luther King Day, and markets in the U.S. will be closed in observance. Other markets around the world will be open and trading on Monday, so again, we'll keep an eye on the Chinese activity in the financial world, keep an eye on European stock reaction to what happens, and so it probably won't be a day of rest, but at least it won't be the every minute crisis in the stock market, such as we saw yesterday when Wall Street really took another dip. The Dow down 390 points for the day yesterday, the S&P 500 down 41, the NASDAQ down 126, and the worry factor, the volatility index, known as VIX, at the Chicago Board Options Exchange, CBOE, went up 12% yesterday. Traders and analysts worried, of course, by the severe market change that we saw yesterday. Market volatility, VIX stands at 27.02 this morning after gaining over 3 points for the day yesterday. But again, when they closed yesterday, they will not reopen trade at U.S. markets until Tuesday morning. Now it's time for Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson this week suggesting let's communicate. The folks at Wink Products Company want to help make your life easier with a family of professional strength cleaning products that really work. Wink Rust Stain Remover is the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. This professional strength formula dissolves the ugly rust stains on white sinks and toilet bowls, color-fast fabrics, and carpets. This little brown bottle has been around for 69 years, and it's still number one. To learn where to find quality Wink products, check us out at WHINK.com. At the American Farm Bureau Convention in Orlando, Florida, a few days ago, there were many topics on the convention program. There were many conversations in the hallway, conversations at dinner as a group after the convention sessions ended for the day. And I'm willing to bet in every program and every conversation, sooner or later, the inability to bring the true food production story to city consumers came into the conversation. Because there is a growing sense of frustration on the part of producers of food, fiber, and energy in this country over the lack of understanding that the non-farm community has over how food is produced and where it's produced and the care that's given by the producers themselves. And while we were there, the Campbell Soup Company added to the frustration by announcing it would now label all of its soup products containing GMOs. That prompted one farmer to say, well, if you're going to have soup without a GMO, that's going to be pretty strange because GMO foods come into just about everything we consume today. And Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack talked about the Campbell decision, saying it's certainly their right to do it. But at the same time, he said, my feeling on labeling is that it's necessary if there is danger involved. And of all the scientific studies done all over the world, there is no scientific proof that there is danger in eating GMO foods or foods produced by other technologies that farmers and ranchers use to produce more food from a diminishing amount of farmland. So it came up time and again, what can we do to tell our story better? And the frustration over consumers not wanting to believe science but wanting to believe blogs, also very evident. Farmers see the internet and social media as an effective way of communicating their story if anybody will read it and believe it instead of going to another blog where there is no farming background. So I guess we keep working and hope that ultimately we do convince some people that their food is safe. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
A presentation of the Tribune Radio Networks. 19 minutes before 6 o'clock here on this Saturday morning. 28 degrees at O'Hare Field and cold weather on the way again as the weekend winds down on Sunday. But we'll be talking about that, of course, throughout the day. We are going to talk markets because questions coming in on what impact does the Wall Street sell-off have on commodity prices? Any connection at all? And we'll find out because coming up, we'll talk to Steve Georgie of Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois, and we'll talk about that. And we'll talk about a very important report that came out this week, but it was sort of overlooked by all of the other activity on Wall Street. But the U.S. Department of Agriculture this week issued a report, it does annually, summing up crop production for the year 2015 and taking a look at some of the impact that that report has on the price of our food. All of that coming up when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Steve Georgie of the Allendale Company in McHenry, Illinois, joins us in studio today. And boy, 2016 is off to quite a start. Let's talk about the crop production report that came out this week. Any surprises for you?
You know, there were. And, you know, when you look at the numbers, it's just raw value. Before the report came out, you really look at those numbers, and there shouldn't have been a lot of changes. But when you have the market that is just ready for something, looking for some change, for corn, we came out about what the estimates were. No major surprises for corn, but the bigger surprise was out of beans. Guys were expecting to see 460 to 470 million carryout for beans. USDA puts out a number of 440. So what that does is that gives us this sense where we should be around $8.50 for beans. Now, maybe we need to be closer to that $9 level. And are we going to see some more changes as we get further into this year? But looking at the numbers at raw value, the biggest thing was the beans, 440 million out of beans. And then also a surprise for wheat acres. Yeah. I think that was kind of a curveball that guys weren't ready for. When you look at wheat acres as a whole, guys were expecting maybe we're going to see wheat acres stay the same. But to see a decline of almost 3 million acres for wheat, that could potentially, with any kind of a weather issue or some kind of a problem around the globe, that could get wheat in this massive downtrend that we've been in. That may end up turning this trend a little bit, and maybe we see some hope for wheat this year.
The wheat market globally has been a tough one with the strength of the dollar. Do you see the global market getting better for U.S. wheat?
You know, I think you said it right. You know, it's going to be the dollar. Yep. If our dollar can remain strong, world exports, you're going to go to a different store. You're going to find some that have more favorable prices, more on a global scale. Right now, the dollar is in control. We continue to see that chop around this $100 level. If we do get another leg higher for the dollar, well, that's going to probably keep exports lower. We see what's happening with crude oil right now. Yeah. That continues to go down. Right now, commodities are in a bear market. And so it's going to take some kind of event in order for that to happen. I think the dollar will be a key component in order for us to really see commodities become the next maybe target to buy or look for some kind of a low. But that dollar will be a key component.
The production figures for 2015, pretty close to what we got at the end of the year.
Right? Yeah, you know, and that's where when you break that down, you know, and you look at the revisions they've had for acreage, the yield changes that they had, no major surprises out of the production numbers. And that's where I think a lot of people were more focused on what were we going to see as far as, well, feed and residual. That was always a big one. If you look back the last several years, that has always been a wild card because it's very hard for us to determine what that figure is throughout the year. So that is just something USDA can keep in their back pocket and adjust a number. But that feed and residual number, well, it came in about what they expected. The other side of it is that you had the wild card on that feed and residual because, well, were cattle held back in pastures? We know heavier cattle have been showing up, so are they being fed more? Are we feeding more corn? Where is it coming from? And so USDA showing their hand, saying that, hey, maybe we did hold back cattle a little bit. They were in the pastures a little longer. We're not feeding more corn as some people had expected. And so that number did come in right at par what people were looking for.
Going back to wheat for a moment, any idea where those 3 million acres will go?
There is some chatter right now that maybe we'll see that go to more of the other categories. So not the big three, not your corn, beans, wheat. Is it going to go to your other categories and more of your small grains? And, you know, it will be interesting as we go forward. I think if we're going to keep prices as low as they are right now, that's going to have a pretty big effect on what we will plant. I think the banker is going to have a big decision on what you're going to talk about or plant as well. As we go forward, what are we going to be? When you talk about operating loans, at these price levels, most people are at a loss. So how are we going to continue to plant corn with just enormous amount of risk there, input costs extremely high? And now, well, what? At lower price levels, you're going to see less corn. You're probably going to see a little more bean acres as we go into that March acreage report. But this 3 million acres of wheat that's been taken out, is it more advantageous to be planting these big three? Or are we going to go look for something else? And I think guys are going to shift to that something else, and we're going to see those kind of absorb elsewhere, not in corn, beans, or wheat this year.
Stock market, worst 5-day start to a year in history.
Yeah.
Is that going to have an impact on farm prices?
You know, I think right now, probably not. If we do continue to see this go further, yes. Right now, we're still trying to figure out where we're at. We know the effects of China. We know what have happened with their currency, devaluing of their currency, their stock markets trying to get control, and that does have a bearing on our markets here. So as we move forward, we're still in this limbo. Well, yes, it is the worst start that we've seen, but there is some hope out there yet. We can see a good recovery. You know, we still have some hope, but if we start taking out some of these lows that we're holding at this point and we start really getting into more of a global concern. Yes, it's a concern right now. You've got everyone watching it. But does that mean that we're in a recession? Watch your GDP. Look for everything else. Are we going to see more of these global markets have a downturn as well? We haven't yet. But if we do, I think that we're going to see that impact cattle prices yet. It's going to impact the mentality of the market, and that will still serve as a negative bearing on our markets. Yeah.
But my market rule that never fails, prices never go the same way forever.
That's true. There is
always a correction. But some of the cattle people I'm talking to are wondering if that's going to be the case. Is the slide in the cattle market going to slow down?
You know, I think it is. You know, we've gotten ourselves right now, when you look at wholesale beef prices that continue to scream higher, but yet futures are kind of in this area where we're consolidating a little bit. We're off the lows. We're not back at these huge highs either, but we're at a point right now where the market's trying to figure out, are we done delivering heavy cattle? That was part of the issue that we had before. You're still hearing some heavy cattle showing up to the market. That still has a bearing and has an impact right now. But now the nervousness of the stock market. Where are we headed? And that is always kind of a picture that guys are watching as far as to determine demand. If we're going to continue to see the stock market break, or if we see more downside to the stock market, the concern is lack of going out and paying high-priced beef. Will we see demand start to slip, and will that drag prices even lower? We're at a spot right now where we're still trying to determine where that is.
Have you been able to determine if we're looking at an expansion in the hog industry?
You know, I think we are. We know we've had some pretty sizable record amount of kills this past year. In 2015, we've had some very big numbers. Will we see that continue for this coming year? I tell you what, the surprise is that the hog market, you look at what we've done since the first of the year, we continue to grind higher as far as prices. You know, I think that we probably will continue to see expansion out of hogs, but right now there is some hope out there. Seasonally, we do continue to grind higher right now, and we are. And so, you know, I think looking at those effects, We need to be careful later on this year, but for now, things do look really good.
So we wait till the end of March now for the pig crop quarterly report and the planting intentions report. Mm-hmm. I would guess that'll be the next big one.
That'll be the next big focus for the grain markets, yes. So,
have you done your survey yet at Allendale?
We start doing that at the end of February.
Okay.
And we do that for 2 weeks, and then we release that 2 weeks before that acreage report.
Right.
And so that's something that we've done very well with. We have a big conference that's coming up at the end of this month that we do a lot of research for, and it's a big deal that we try to give everybody a good plan moving forward for this year. So not only just the grains, but we also touch on weather and what's to come and what to expect.
And is that conference open to anybody, but they pre-register, and how do they do that?
Yep, it is open to everybody. You can go right on our website, which is allendale-inc.com. You can go right on the website or give us a call. We'll be glad to get you registered. It's the 26th, 27th, and 28th of this month. It's a three-day event, and we touch on everything from price direction, price outlooks, and as far as price strategy, what do you do?
The big question for the year 2016.
It is. What do we do?
That's Allendale, and we look to you and your dad and other people on your staff throughout the year for market advice, and we thank you for that. A visit with Steve Georgi of Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois. Well, another reminder that next week in the U.S., it's a four-day trading week. Markets close Monday in observance of Martin Luther King Day. So a quick look at where we will start the price levels in commodities on Tuesday morning. After yesterday's action that saw down limit moves in the cattle futures market again, the April live cattle contract down the $3 daily permissible limit at $128.50 a hundredweight. And the April feeder cattle, well, as a matter of fact, January, March, and April feeder cattle contracts down the daily limit of $4.50 a hundredweight. February lean hogs will start next Tuesday at $62 even after losing 35 cents a hundredweight in yesterday's trade. Turning to the grain market, a mixed close yesterday with March wheat ending up 4.25 cents a bushel, short covering coming into that market. So Tuesday morning, the wheat trade will start at $4.73¾ a bushel. March corn gained 5¼ cents yesterday. It'll start the trade Tuesday at $3.63¼. Soybean complex, though, moved lower yesterday. So that means the March soybean contract will start Tuesday morning at $8.79 after dropping 4¼ cents in yesterday's trade. And on the calendar, fairly quiet week ahead, but then we move toward the end of the month of January with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. I mentioned earlier the middle of February in Cincinnati, Ohio, the National Outstanding Young Farmer Awards program will be held. It's a program I've been involved in for 50 years. It's always fun to go back and visit some of the outstanding young farmers, going back, in my case, to the first event that I attended, which was 1961. And it's still going, and look forward to that. That will be the Valentine's Day weekend, and it will be in Cincinnati, Ohio, for the National Outstanding Young Farmer Awards program. Commodity Classic coming up, and you can go online and register for that. Max Armstrong will be covering that event later this winter. That's our time here on the Saturday Morning Show. As always, we appreciate your company and the guests that take time to talk markets and all of the other activities and events in the important world of agribusiness. It comes your way on Chicago's very own WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.